Hello world, it's the Clue Phone, and it's for you. Welcome to the third installment of Dream World. As Reverend Jim said last week, we are going to be learning a method to talk to our dreams and ask specific questions. We recommend having a way to take notes available.
Hey Jay, how's it going this week?
Well, it was an interesting week. At that age where you start losing a few people in your sphere, and that was not such a great thing, but glad to be back.
Well, it's good to have you back. It was kind of rough winging it without you last week. One of the things that I did suggest we would do last week is we would conduct an active imagination. And how's your imagination these days, Jay?
Well, it wanders in and out, but I think I'm fairly active.
Okay. What's going on here is dreams are a communication from the other you, and everybody's created a wannabe you. I said last week, when you reach for something on the table and your parents decide that whatever you're reaching for is more important than your feelings and you get a little slap on the hand, it creates two attitudes. One of them is, I'm going to comply, and I don't want to go through the hassle of fighting my folks over this. And the other one is, who the heck are you to tell me not to touch that, and I'm too important to get slapped on the hand. So at any rate, at that point, you start thinking in dual channels, and everybody does it. Everybody's at least two people and probably more than that. But the one that gets repressed through the course of time is the one that you need to meet up with and balance with in order to create a unified mind, to become one person again, or as a Zen master would say, put on your original face. So what's going on here is the other you's trying to talk to you through the dreams, and also, quite frankly, our higher power talks to you through the dreams too. Well, one of the things that Jung introduced, and I really think it's one of the most valuable tools you can have in dealing with your dreams, is what he called an active imagination. And the first thing we're going to do as far as active imagination is concerned is we're going to establish an alchemical laboratory for you to work on your dream symbols, and also for you to have a helper, and for you to have someone who you can go ask questions of. So what we would like to do right now is, if everybody possibly could, lean back, close your eyes, and try and relax your mind a minute. Imagine you're at home around the house, and you're just at home, everything's normal, all your pets are there, and you walk over to your kitchen sink, and you open the doors to underneath the kitchen sink, and instead of all the cleaning supplies you normally see there, you see a stairway, and it's heading down underneath your house. So you head down those stairs, and at the bottom of the stairs, there's a door. I want you to take notes of what the stairway was like. I want you to tell me what kind of door it was. And then I want you to go through the door. And through the other side of the door, there's a laboratory. Now, you look around the laboratory and you notice there's someone there. I want you to walk over to that person and ask them their name.
That would be Matt.
Okay. Now, after you've asked them their name, I want you to ask Matt a question, and don't ask it out loud, and don't provide the answers out loud, but I want you to ask Matt, what is the problem? Now, if Matt gives you an image, I want you to take notes of that image. Now, I want you to ask Matt, what is the solution? And remember the images that come to you. And for the third question, I want you to ask him, what is the synthesis of the two? If you've got three complete images there, I want you to tell Matt thank you, go back out the door, walk back up the stairs, come out from underneath the sink and close the doors. Okay, now you should have some stuff to write down, like what is the problem? You should have gotten an image there. What is the solution? You should have gotten an image there. And what is the synthesis of the two? You should have gotten an image there. Write down the most full description of all three of those events you possibly can. Treat it like it's a dream. Put every bit of energy you can into remembering those symbols and writing them down. Some of the things to remember when you're writing down the whole experience is write down what kind of stairway it was. Was it wood? Was it stone? Was it steel? Did the door at the bottom of the stairs go right, left, or straight? What kind of laboratory was it? Was it new and modern? Was it old and alchemical? Now, one thing I would like you to do for your assignment for the week is find out the meaning. Get a meaning name book and find out the meaning of the name of the person that you asked to be your alchemical helper. And now you have a dream that you had while you were awake. And it was a directed dream. One of the things that you can discover is that you can interact by going back to that laboratory you just established in your mind. And let's suppose you have a dream symbol you can't figure out. I did this with Pan, as a matter of fact, in my quest for my own sanity. But when you want clarification of a dream symbol, go back down to your alchemical kitchen that you just established. Talk to your helper. Also, do an investigation of your helper's names. That's very important information for you. And then, when you go back down to the alchemical kitchen, get a pair of tweezers out of the laboratory and take your dream symbol in your mind. Pick it up with a pair of tweezers and put it in a beaker. Put a cork on the beaker and set the beaker over a low flame on a Bunsen burner. And come back and look at the symbol about every 4 or 5 days. And you'll find that as you learn more about the symbol, it will change and it will give you more information. But this is a way to ask for clarification of a symbol. You can also ask for a dream for clarification of a symbol. I didn't get that, Lord. Please send it to me again in a more understandable form. And you'll get the dream. It will clarify itself. It will become more numinous. It will become more evident if you show interest. A lot of people tell me they don't dream. Put a pen and paper by the bed. That's telling the dream maker, hey, I'm fixing to pay attention. And paying attention to your dreams is the most worthwhile activity you can engage in. It will rewire your head to be the person that only has one mind working instead of two. So at any rate, you said your alchemical helper's name was Matt. Is that right, Jay?
That's correct.
And does Matt mean anything to you?
Well, I've had friends in the past that were Matts. However, for clarification for me, what do you mean by synthesis? You said the third question should be, what is the synthesis
of the two?
Of the two.
Okay, well, synthesis is when you take those two halves and shuffle the deck together, and you have one deck of cards again. You don't have the split mind anymore. A synthesis is when the problem meets the solution. Okay. So what was the problem? Did you get anything strange in the image there?
No, it was pretty much a clear dollar sign.
The dollar was money. Okay, money is the problem. Okay, and what was the solution?
I didn't have a clear picture on that.
You didn't?
No, but I will revisit that this evening.
Okay. Well, it's really important. If you can get an image of the solution, it's a very, very important thing to do. When I did that exercise, it was over 30 years ago, and the first thing I saw was a huge ice cream cone. What was the problem? I saw a huge ice cream cone. And then I asked when asked what the solution was, I saw one of those seated Buddhas with its hands in the lotus position, and it had on one of those hats with the gold curly cues in it, and all of a sudden his head started getting taller and taller and taller. And then at the top of his head, it turned into a flagpole, and on the flagpole there was a yellow shirt that was waving in the breeze, tied to the flagpole by its sleeves. And then when they asked what the synthesis was, I saw a black cane with a gold cap on it, and it had the UN peace symbol on top of it. So that was my original introduction to the problem. Through the course of time, I learned that the big ice cream thing is the fear thing I'm always talking about. It's being a mama's boy. It's sweet mother's milk. It's the world owes me something. And then the big Buddha with the yellow shirt on it. Yellow is the color of intuition. I've discovered that. And I've definitely been into Buddhism. And I'm hoping that the synthesis of the two is this church and the cane with the peace symbol, the UN symbol on top of it. So at any rate, that's how mine went.
Okay, so I'm headed to bed this evening. I'll have a pad and pen by the bed. How should I go about, what should I think about to direct my dreams before closing my eyes?
If you have a specific question you want answered, ask for a dream on that subject and you'll get it. You'll find that after you get working at it, you get 4 or 5 dreams a night. You sleep in 90-minute cycles. Also, this is a good clue for you. When you're asleep, try and time your sleep to be a multiple of 90 minutes. If you can only sleep 4 hours, only sleep 3. Because if you're in the middle of a dream cycle when you wake up, and it doesn't matter if you've had 7 or 8 hours of sleep, if you're in the middle of a dream cycle when you wake up, you're going to be tired until you go back to sleep again. You need to finish the cycle, so sleep 1.5 hours, 3 hours, 4.5 hours, 6 hours, 7.5, but don't sleep anything outside of that range, and you'll discover that no matter how many hours of sleep you've had, you'll be awake and functioning. But if you wake up in the middle of a dream cycle, you will be like you're in a dream world all day long. That's pun intended.
Well, if I can just get my bladder to cooperate with the cycle here, we'll be good.
This getting old is not for the faint of heart, is it? But you mentioned what should my thoughts be to direct it. Well, pray for the subject matter if you have a specific subject, but your dreams are pretty much in charge of what comes to you. You know, it's real hard to direct specifically the message. The one thing that I will tell you about that I'm absolutely sure of is that the unconscious is water. All of the things that have to do with your behaviors you're unaware of or things like that, the subject will come out of the water. It'll start off as a crab or a fish or something, but it starts off as something coming out of the water or the water, like taking a shower. One time I was in a business where I was forced by the almighty dollar to drive like a madman. And I knew I was driving like a madman, and I knew I needed to slow it down and cool it. And during that week, I had a dream I was taking a shower and knew something was coming because I was in the shower. Well, that week I got a ticket, and I'm sure the shower, from the retrospective aspects of it, the shower was telling me, slow down or I'm going to send you something in real life. And sure enough, I didn't slow down, and it sent me a good couple of $100 bill in real life.
As I think about it, it seems like that symbols are fairly pervasive in everything we do.
Well, absolutely. If you look for symbols, you'll find them while you're awake occurring in real life. If you're adept at handling them in the dream stage, you won't have so many surprises in real life, but I can see them coming for other people sometimes, and I've learned to bite my tongue. You can't predict anything, but yeah, Symbols are pervasive. Dream language is pervasive in almost anything we do. We start off from the point of view of the way we're oriented towards religion as Christians with an immediate dream, and it's real easy to interpret, and that's the Genesis story. Everybody is born into the Garden of Eden when your folks are taking care of you. The food's right there. Mama's tits right in your face. If you want something, it's done for you. If you want clean pants, somebody does that for you. You're in the Garden of Eden until you're, what I call eating the fruit of the tree of knowledge, is the way the myth goes in the story of Genesis. And it's actually your related side. You know, I've known some fundamentalists that say, this shows that women are evil. But what a woman is in your dreams, if you're a man, is it's your relatedness to the world. The male principle is the creative principle. The female principle is the related principle. So the symbol of Eve picking the apple from the fruit of the tree of knowledge, picking that fruit, is not saying that a woman did it. It's saying your related side does it. But what the tree of knowledge is the knowledge of your own death. And that is when you get kicked out of the garden. When you discover in a real and personal way that God has you on his hit list. And when you discover that in a real and personal way, you can have one of two reactions consciously, and you will have the opposite reaction unconsciously. Your first reaction, if it's fear, you immediately become a soul person. You become intuitive. You become able to tell what somebody's thinking. When the phone rings, you know who's on the other end of the line. Fear people become intuitive, and therefore they get soul given to them. And the thing they have to acquire through the course of their life is spirit. Well, if you react angrily, hey, I'm too important to toss away like this. Who is God to do this to me, create me and only in order to destroy me, and I'm worth something. That's a spirit person. That's an angry person. Spirit people are given a sense of worth and the ability to create something innately, but they have trouble with the intuitive functions. They're not very soulful. They don't ever put themselves in another person's shoes. A person can be in a bad mood right in front of them and they won't pick up to it on it because they are busy being angry and busy being righteous. So the course of life requires that we have spirit and soul when we leave, and we're given one of them or have a good head start on one of them by whether we reacted angrily or whether we reacted fearfully to the prospects of being tossed out of the garden. But that's probably the longest-running dream symbol for a person of Judeo-Christian heritage that there is the Genesis story. And it's an allegory for every man on the planet. But when you've overcome your anger, you've got soul. And when you've overcome your fear, you've got spirit. And that's what it's about. You got to have spirit and soul to go. And when you get them both, then you can go and not have any regrets about leaving.
So in the first week you had mentioned the I Ching. Are there any other things that you follow, such as birth signs or?
I think that anything we're given is symbolic. Like, for example, they say right now we're on the cusp of the change of the age of from Pisces to the Aquarian age. Well, I think the symbols of it are just amazing. It's a dream symbol, no doubt about it. You think about the Christian era, and Christ was referred to as the fisherman. Remember I said the behavior comes from underneath the water as a fish or a crab or something. Well, Christ forgives us of our sins, but he also gives us the admonition, go and sin no more. Well, that's an extremely difficult process if you're constantly pulling fish out of the water and the fish being unexplained and unaware, unconscious behavior. if you've got these characters that take you over, it's very, very difficult to go and sin no more, because sometimes somebody else has you. Like that example I gave last week when Jay wasn't here about me being drunker and Cooter Brown and insulting good friends. You know, I'm a consciously fearful person. So that means I'm an unconsciously angry person. So if I lower my level to beneath the water, I've got some extremely bad monsters underneath there. And that's just one of the hazards of me doing drugs and alcohol, is that every now and then I have to listen to stories about what a jerk I was yesterday. And I either have to not drink or put up with stories like that. That's just the way it is. Those characters are so far removed from me that though the alcohol may be causing blackouts, when one of those characters get me, it may be an entirely schizophrenic episode. I really don't know. But I do know to be vigilant. And I do know that the potential is there. And that's what going and sinning no more is about, is learning all these unconscious characters. On one of the shows, I mentioned that I'm a little sedate, I'm a little obese, I'm a little sedentary, and when I have to get up and do something physical, I know for a fact that I have to get mad to get the energy to do it. Well, that over the course of time, I've learned that. So I've learned to keep that thing in a bottle and focus all the energy on the task rather than on grouching at whoever's in the room with me. That's just something I've learned about me over time, and it's a question of getting familiar with the characters that might hop into your body on any given circumstance. But let's look at the symbol of the Piscean age. That's two fish under the water. You've seen the symbols of Jesus that have the little fish on the back of the cars in front of you. Well, Christ was the fisherman. He's pulling up the behavior and forgiving you for it. I'm sorry, I beg your forgiveness, Jesus. And he goes, you're forgiven. Quite frankly, you weren't in charge. Most of the time when we're doing something we really don't want to do, it's because one of these characters has come up in us. So, the symbol for the unconscious characters is the fish. It's a crab. It's the fish. It's anything that comes from underneath the water in your dreams. So when Jesus is talking about being a fisher of men, one of the things he's doing is pulling our unconscious behavior to the surface where we have to look at it. One of the reasons I think Christians are so into being forgiven is they're the most likely people on the planet to do something that needs it. So we have Jesus, his symbol being the fisherman, pulling the unconscious behavior from underneath the water. The next symbol that we're moving into from the symbol of Jesus is the water bearer. Well, what the water bearer does is it lowers the level of the water to where the unconscious items can be seen above the water. That's becoming more conscious. That's taking the things that are showing up as fish, working on the symbols, and turning them into recognizable behavior patterns, and discovering what the fish actually are in us. And fish are something that stinks when they come around and last too long. And that's the way a personality, an unconscious personality is that when it's got you too long, and it's got you doing what it wants rather than what you want, it starts to smell like a fish that's been around the house about 3 or 4 days. And that's what going and sinning no more is about, is discovering these things that have come up to the surface and need to be forgiven, discovering what they are, and starting to extricate them from your personality when you don't want them there. They're going to be there, but you can decide when they live, and you can decide whether they have this moment or not. But if you just let it go, you're going to keep grouching at people when you have to do something. If you just let it go, you're going to keep being afraid and throwing money to the seagulls. If you just let it go, you're going to do the things that the unconscious, immortal personality wants you to do rather than what you want. And it's very, very rough on a human being to have an immortal personality in it.
most everyone I know is resistant to change. Apparently, we should be seeking change. And
we don't have any choice about change. That's what the I Ching is. It's the book of changes. But in the preface, the premise of the I Ching is this. The only constant we're ever going to have in our life is change. That's our only constant. So all you can do is get ready for the next change because it's coming. Do you want to be prepared for it? Do you want to have the right attitude? That's what the I Ching is about. People are always saying, well, the I Ching tells the future. Yeah, the I Ching tells the future, but more importantly, it tells what your attitude needs to be while it's going on. It's constantly giving you admonitions about the attitude of the superior man and what it takes to cross the great water. And that's what it's all about, is getting across the water without any of those unconscious beings disrupting your journey.
Well, that makes sense. That most of the unhappy people that I know are people who are resistant to change and just trying to tread the same water and keep themselves in the same boat, I guess.
Well, a lot of people are very successful at making it last a very long time, but changes are coming. And the longer you hang on to the status quo, the more difficult it is to change, as evidenced by our political situation in this country. The two-party system, as you just put it a little while ago, is boiled down to the stupid party and the evil party.
And I'm voting stupid.
Yeah, I guess. It's better to be stupid than evil. I'll agree with you there.
Well, we won't be making any friends with the politicians this week.
Well, that's okay by me. I resent people that are in charge of their own raises. I think I deserve a raise. Speaking of that, why don't y'all send me a few bucks to keep this show on the air? Our post office box is P.O. Box 248, Driftwood, Texas, 78619. We're going to try and keep this show on the air every week we possibly can. And yeah, we feel like government's an intrusion on your life and that the two-party system is a function of the land of the free and the home of the brave, where you can be free if you're brave enough to be. But the fact of the matter is, if you want to experience real freedom, I recommend a travelogue to Amsterdam or something like that, because it's one thing to talk about freedom, it's another thing to actually have it. And we talk a great freedom game, but what kind of freedom are we bringing to an Afghani opium farmer?
Well, we have a nuclear solution.
Well, that'll work really well. Yeah, it's easier to make people comply with what you think they ought to be doing if you just blow them off the face of the planet. But the fact of the matter is, it's time to quit it. It's time for the tank to quit being a political tool. So here at the Church of the Meek, we would constantly ask you to quit making the fist, quit driving the tank, and ridicule those who do. Well, one of the advantages of being here in the studio is we can look up anything immediately, and just to let you know, what Matthew means is it means gift from Yahweh. It means gift of God. So your psychological helper is a gift from God. And I guarantee you he is. What did he look like?
Kind of a short, squat fella. Actually was hooded. Bespectacled.
Had on glasses.
Had on glasses is what I'm trying to say. And that's my impression at this point. I will go home and
write everything
journal.
Down. Write down everything. That's a good first entry in your dream journal. It absolutely is. Write down the name of your psychological helper and as much as you can remember about the problem, the solution, and the synthesis as you can. And go through that again if you didn't get clear pictures, because they are there.
Well, the whole staircase and everything, I was right there in the Alice in Wonderland kind of...
It was cartoonish?
Yes.
I understand. I've had cartoons, too. One of my active imaginations, I was actually with the Warner Brothers cartoon gang, Bugs Bunny, Daffy Duck, all of them, and we were playing on something like a killer whale. Oh, well, goodness. Synchronicity is a wonderful thing. Jay just handed me a pin with all of these characters on it from this act of imagination, the one he had in his pocket. Yeah, synchronicity is a wonderful thing. Pretty neat. At any rate, we were playing on this thing that looked like Enchanted Rock or Half Dome up in Yosemite, trying to see who could get as close to the edge of it without falling off, and at the bottom of it was a lake with a killer whale in it. That was kind of a symbol of my running contraband days.
And the running contraband, what's that about?
The statute of limitations is run. I've become a better person than I used to be. So at any rate, I'll clearly fess up. It's part of my phase where I was doing anything I possibly could to become as scared as I possibly could. And that's the logical place to go is smuggling.
If you'd like to talk with us or send us a message, email, that kind of thing, or, of course, any money is always appreciated, visit us at thechurchofthemeek.org. That is thechurchofthemeek.org. Or you can snail mail us at P.O. Box 248, Driftwood, Texas,
78619.
Thank you for that zip, because I was questioning that.
Well, we never write ourselves.
Just turn the key.
That's right. At any rate, our theory here at the Church of the Meek is if everybody becomes individually sane, the world would become collectively a better place. And if you think it's time to get some sanity loose in the world, to stop the Christian soldiers from being armed so heavily and the whirling dervishes from saying, convert or die infidel, it's time to take violence out of the world. It's time to start a peaceful dialogue. It's time to be able to talk about religion and politics without violence. It's time for the tank to quit becoming a political tool. It's time for the fist to become obsolete is a means of winning an argument.
And if you don't like it, we'll kill you.
Dang, Jay.
Oh, I'm just going for the political
right
here.
That's right. Yeah, bomb, 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 Iran. Yeah, that tickled me to death seeing John McCain accusing Barack Obama of poor judgment when we've got tape of him singing Bomb, Iran. You want to talk about poor judgment? So I'm with you. Let's vote for the stupid party rather than the evil party.
And just as a service for listeners, if you Google the meaning of names, it'll bring up several sites that can help you find who is leading you on this path, as Jim just did for me.
And well, my guy was Alfred, and that means elf in good counsel. I think I'd rather have a gift from God.
There were other tipping points that you had promised to talk about last week. What are some of those, and what are you thinking about?
I guess the main thing I'm thinking about right now is I'm a little worried on whether I'm doing any good or not as far as helping people understand how much is given to us at night, and the fact that we absolutely are cradled by the hand of God at every moment during our life. If we just pay attention to our dreams, you'll find yourself right in the middle of a path that you've been informed about. It's just a very comforting feeling. Even when I was a wild outlaw, I had dreams that got me out of trouble. I had dreams that extricated me from situations. I had dreams that kept me from getting arrested. I had dreams that told me how to behave to keep people from getting hurt.
All through your life, you hear the saying, follow your dreams.
Well, that's true. And you know, a lot of these things, like he's a real pain in the neck and stuff like that, you know, follow your dreams, stuff like that. They're true on a level you wouldn't believe. Like, I have good friends that are able to tell you what kind of martyr a person was by how they got sick. And one of the things that they pointed out to me is if a person is around somebody that irritates them all day long, like at work, and they don't want to be in the presence of this person, that they'll start getting a pain in their neck. You know, they'll have a crick in their neck and it'll tighten up and you won't be able to turn your head properly. And there's hundreds of things like that. If you dream about flying, it's telling you you don't have your feet on the ground. It's telling you there's something that isn't quite real about your expectations of an achievement you just made. Just some of those everyday slogans will just amaze you because of the symbology involved in the slogan. But if somebody's a real pain in the neck and you have to be around them, you'll get a pain in the neck. That's a fact.
So you think disease is caused by martyrdom?
There is, I think the most important message we got from Christ is he's the martyr, we don't have to be. And martyrdom can very cleverly disguise itself. But what's going on is there is an archetype that Jung referred to as a martyr. And anytime you do something you don't really want to do for somebody else, you'll find you have an accident or you get sick because you're giving up a piece of you reluctantly against your will, and the martyr requires a body. So if you find somebody that's sick all the time, look at their behavior. You'll discover that they're whining and complaining a lot, that they're doing things that they don't really want to do, and they're whining about having to do them. That's what martyrdom is in one face. Another face of martyrdom is drug addiction. It's telling God, I don't feel good enough. I need a little boost, and you haven't quite done right by me. Another form of martyrdom is having somebody show up at your house uninvited and expecting to be your guest, and you go ahead and give in to it. Mark my words, within a week to 10 days, you'll be sick. That's just the way it is. Martyrdom is something we're not supposed to do. Christ was supposed to be the last martyr, and we don't have to do that anymore. You have complete freedom of choice, and if you are asked a favor and don't want to do it, don't do it, because it'll get you if you do. It'll come back and bite you.
Well, I can buy that for a percentage of the population, but it doesn't explain sick children.
I don't know. I think you can become a martyr at any age, and there's a thing. I've noticed it on some sick children. I'm not saying every one of them has the problem, but there are children that get paid loving attention when they're injured. And they'll go do something to get that loving attention. So there are psychological events that affect children, and that's just one of the hazards of the situation, is that our psychology starts extremely young. I've known people that were tossed out of the garden as young as two, through divorce or something like that, where one parent suddenly disappears and is never seen again. That can be the event that triggers the getting tossed out of the garden. So our psychology, I don't think there's any limit on when it starts. You know, my problem with fear started pre-memory. I was afraid before I remembered. So I'm not really certain that there isn't an element of that in sick children. I'm not saying that there's anything somebody that's that young can do about the attitude, because they're too young to even examine their own behavior at that point. But I do firmly believe that most illness and most injury is directly related to some kind of a martyr complex.
Well, that should get some emails.
Well, it probably will, and it'll probably irritate some people. And I may be completely off base on this. I may be completely wrong on this, but there is an element of expectation just keep in mind, it will happen if you're doing something for somebody you really don't want to do. That's a guarantee right there. So keep that in mind next time you're asked a favor by the neighbor you really can't stand. That, is this worth getting sick over? Now, there is a conversion process you can do where you turn the martyr into the hero. And if you can do that, then it's okay to go ahead and proceed with the favor. If you can give yourself some credit and some heroism points and that sort of thing, and look at it as I'm doing something really, really nice for somebody and expecting nothing in return, and I'm a hero for it, then fine, you can do it that way. But if you've got that reluctant clinging to the, oh man, I don't really want to do this, then that's really indicative of the martyr, and that really will cause an accident or cause an illness.
Your wife's home, judging from the little alarms there.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I guess the beep, beep, beep's going to be a regular part of the show.
It has been a recurring theme, hasn't it?
Just as a reminder to everybody listening, if you have any specific dream questions or anything you'd like us to touch on while we're talking on the show here, please feel free to send us any kind of a question, either via the website and our email addresses. Jay's is DeaconJay@thechurchofthemeek.org, all one word, all lowercase. Mine is Reverend Jim, all one word, all lowercase, at thechurchofthemeek.org. And our snail mail address is P.O. Box 248, Driftwood, Texas, 78619. If you have any specific questions for us, we'd sure appreciate the opportunity to answer them for you. And if you have any interest in seeing the show continue, we'd sure appreciate it if you could either click the PayPal button on our website, or if you could drop a few bucks in the mail to us. I'd sure appreciate the help on keeping the show going. I honestly believe if we become more sane individually, we pursue our dreams, and we become one mind, each and every one of us, that the insanity may leave the world around us as we get better individually. The way the church operates for memberships is we have a nominating membership for $10. We have a voting membership for $25. And what we do with the money is we use 10% of it to pay for the show here and pay for the operation of the Church of the Meek. The rest of it goes into a savings account. And that money earns interest, and as the interest comes up every month, the voting members vote on where that money is sent. We prorate it on the basis of the top 10 vote-getters. Nominating members can send in suggestions to suggestions@thechurchofthemeek.org. We send out ballots on the 20th of each month to the voting members. The voting members vote, and then on the first of each month, that's decided, and we distribute funds on the fifth. But if you have a particular interest, you don't need to be a nominating member to send us a suggestion on somebody that could use some help, or someone that could use us coming in and doing something to get them in a better circumstance. So at any rate, if you have any ideas, please write us. You'll find all of our information on our website at www.thechurchofthemeek.org. One more thing I'd like to mention is the kind folks at bbsradio.com are archiving the shows. So if you missed an issue and want to go back and pick something up, feel free to go to BBS, go to their archives, and you can find our past shows in their archives.
Well, we have a couple emails we might want to comment on. The first of which is, who are you guys?
Boy, you want to go first, Jay, or should I?
Sure. Well, I am just a person. I've known Jim for, 30 years now? Something like that, on and off. We've kind of come and gone in each other's lives, and he has been speaking of the Church of the Meek for, I think, as long as I can remember. And actually, it just came into fruition here recently, and asked if I wanted to be included. So that was my impetus on coming this way. I've had some spiritual questions and doing self-search. That's kind of what brought me on board.
Well, thanks, Jay. Yeah, incidentally, it's 33 years, but who's counting? Now, we're...
I can only count to 21 when I'm naked.
So. It's really... when you're naked. And that's using all the digits, isn't it? Oh, well, thanks. I'm sure our religious coverage needed that. Now, Jay and I were ran into each other 33 years ago when his band stopped into my recording studio in Houston a long, long time ago. 1975 is my guess.
That's right, and probably when my best friend married your sister, I think, was...
Yeah, right about then, yeah, they could have done that, too. Yeah, at any rate, we've known each other almost 35 years, or probably 35 years, known of each other, and been good friends for part of that. But who am I? I'm a guy that unfortunately made the choice to become a musician when I was a small guy, and... I was going to be a musician, and my dad definitely did not encourage the activity, and I can see why from this end of my life. As I said in a previous show, I stole one of Jay's jokes. What's the difference between a giant pizza and an Austin musician? One of them can feed a family of four. The other one definitely can't. But at any rate, I've had the idea. I had a dream in 1983 to start the Church of the Meek. My dream consisted of me standing in front of a crowd, and I thought I was supposed to write a book about the Church of the Meek, and then later on I had a dream that told me, no, you're supposed to start the Church of the Meek. Okay. Well, I had a dream that I was, in 1983, standing up in front of a crowd. It was the Church of the Meek. I knew that in my dream. And while I'm talking to the crowd, I felt this pimple come up in my bottom lip, and I'm trying to squeeze the pimple and talk to the crowd at the same time, which is kind of like what I'm doing here. And eventually I'm squeezing my lip, and it pops open like a pustule, and a pearl comes out of it. And I went, well, maybe that means I'm going to say something that somebody will pick up on. And I've been trying to do this for a long time, but it takes a lot of courage because, quite frankly, in a lot of ways, fundamentalists has made it out of vogue to talk about God in the same manner that it's out of vogue to talk about politics. But whenever I talk about God or politics to people individually, they're all for it. But they're definitely afraid of it being construed as something a little more fundamental than what I have in mind here. And that is, I think we need to be able to talk about God. You know, when we have a major religious institution engaged in criminal enterprise and cover-ups and spending $250 million on hushing up things and keeping criminals from going to jail, it's time to be able to talk about religion in society. One of the largest churches in the world pulled this off, and I'm sure you know who I'm talking about.
They don't have a pope, do they?
Yeah, I think they do. But the fact of the matter is, you know, part of the Catholic tenet is that the pope's infallible, but I honestly believe there was a little fallacy going on here when $250 million, that's with a B, dollars are spent on legal fees, hush money, and moving priests around so they don't get caught again. And when things like that are going on in religious society, it's time to open things up for discussion. It's time to be able to talk about your religion. It's time to be able to discuss why you believe it or why you don't believe it or what's going on with it. It's time for your logic and your faith to work together. And there is a perfectly logical way for your faith to work. And it doesn't involve a leap of faith. It involves taking some notes. It involves doing a little bit of work. But when you discover you're getting the information every night from the man himself, it's a whole lot easier to believe in God. When you're told something that's going to happen to you 2 weeks from now in a dream, it does a whole lot for your faith.
Well, I kind of like a church where if I'm tithing, I might have some say in where the money's going, and to know that it's going towards good works rather than hush money.
Well, isn't that the truth? But, yeah, our books are completely open. You'll see what happens to every penny that comes in, and you're not going to find me pulling I'm not going to run off and take the money and make an amusement park and keep the ticket money myself or anything like that. It's going to good works, good causes, good people, and genuine charity.
We have one here from Betty. We'll protect last names. She says, I have had a dream where I'm traveling with people I haven't seen or thought of in years. What am I to take from that?
The main thing that you need to realize is that the most credible person for determining the meaning of a dream is you. And the way that you start the process of learning the language is write the dream down. Dreams can be precognitive. You might be seeing these people real soon if it's a precognitive dream. You have things that you associate with those people. For example, if you projected a certain trait onto one of them, it may be indicative of something that you need to incorporate in you. It may be indicative of a skill that you need to hone. It may be indicative of a confidence you need to acquire. But the way to do this and determine what the dream meant is write it down and see what happens in 3 to 5 weeks. If it's a precognitive dream, then you'll see the people in your dream. If it's a element where you've projected a certain character, let's suppose you projected courage onto a person that you saw in the dream, and in 3 to 5 weeks, you're going to need some courage for an event. Well, that may be what's going on there. One of the things that they say is every character in a dream is you. And it's just a different piece of you, a different aspect of you that isn't properly integrated.
So in my case, if this were my dream, it might be something that I would try to seek out my Matthew.
Yeah. You could go and do a Canterbury Tales kind of symbol thing. Go down to your alchemical kitchen and take that group of people, if it is a group, and make them small, put them in a flask, Erlenmeyer flask or something along those lines, put a cork in the top of the bottle and put a little flame underneath it and see what happens to it. But
that sounds rather German.
Yeah, it is. It's kind of German, but, you know, it doesn't hurt anybody. Keep the flame low. Don't turn it up real high. And when I did that to Pan, that's when I learned all the things I've learned about Pan. Is it gave me insights into it. Just for example, Pan is the god that Christians have turned into the devil. He's got the goat legs and the horns, and the way that symbol worked was if you try real hard to be like Jesus, you'll wind up being like Pan. Okay.
Well, we've come to the end of another program, and I'd like to remind you again that you can reach us at thechurchofthemeek.org. Again, thechurchofthemeek.org, or at P.O. Box 248, Driftwood, Texas. And that zip again, Jim?
78619.
So this is Jay and Jim signing off till next week. Have a good life.
Thanks for looking into the show, and we'll talk to you next week. Bye. 19, and I'm going to keep this up. I sure could use and would appreciate you giving me a hand. Bye. Just one more thing. I'd really like to hear from you, no matter what you'd like to speak about. If you want to send us a few bucks to keep the program going, if you want to ask us any questions, if you want my definitely biased opinion about how to make the world a better place, please don't hesitate to write www.thechurchofthemeek.org or P.O. Box 248, Driftwood, Texas, 78619.